Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. Matt, what is something that you think is overrated?
This is a little abstract, but I think having cool taste is overrated.
Yeah,
and this is related to liking Paddington too. I think that too many people, especially in Los Angeles or wherever, are obsessed with having the most obscure, interesting taste.
Right.
And what it creates is a shame culture where you feel ashamed of things that you might get joy from that aren't cool. And I think we should get over that.
Do you have a an example of something else you've felt shame about liking?
Well, this one is now a little complicated because her new public persona, but Taylor Swift for a long time was someone that I really enjoyed her music, her album 1989. Now she's like kind of maybe not the best person or whatever is going on with her, but I felt a lot of shame for liking Taylor Swift for a while.
What do you think of the song Shake It Off?
I like it.
Magic.
I do too.
I like it a lot.
I've taken a lot of shit for really standing up for that song.
Yeah. It's
great. You know,
it's a great song.
You got to stand for what you believe in, Jack.
I do.
And you know the reason why we haven't seen Jack shirtless? Because he has all the lyrics tattooed on his chest.
Right. Along with a big eagle for some reason.
Yeah.
Chloe Kim. First generation Korean or second generation Korean, depending on. So this is the main thing I want to talk about, is the fact that there's no agreed on definition of first generation Korean. I assumed first generation meant that you were the first generation that was born in the United States. My wife is first generation Korean, like Chloe Kim. And apparently that's not an agreed on thing, because I saw somebody referring to Chloe Kim as second generation and her parents who immigrated here as first generation American. Let's just make up our minds, guys. Come on.
So there's no like dictionary definition of what counts?
No. When you go to Wikipedia, they say first generation means one of two completely conflicting things.
Yeah, because in Japanese, I'm considered Nisei, which is a person born in the U.S.
Right.
Whose parents are from Japan.
Yeah.
And that's considered second generation. But I'm like, but aren't I the first? You feel like it's about your birth.
Right.
Not if you immigrate. So I don't know.
Man. Yeah.
Whatever.
There's such a robust racist lexicon in every culture.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Bizarre.
But anyways, she crushed it. She was basically already had the gold medal locked away. And then she was like, you know, I really didn't want to come here and just win gold without doing my best. And so she put up a final run that like scored a 98 or something like that.
She blacked out. Cause I think I think it was a Chinese snowboarder who was the closest person to put pressure on her. And when she fucked up her last trick, it was in the bag. And then she went and she was like, all right, fuck it. Let me show you how Chloe Kim does. And yeah, it was
she hit back to back 1080 degree spins, which I'm not good enough at math to figure
three.
Out.
That's three.
three spins, which that's too many spins for somebody to be able to do in the air and not throw up on themselves.
You can see why they came up with euphemisms, though.
It'd be right.
Weird if it was like, and she's doing one, two, three spins, three air spins
Kim. She did back-to-back three air spins. And
that's like six spins.
That would be me if I was an Olympics commentator. Sometimes they get too thick with the lingo, though.
Yeah,
where I'm just like, what the fuck does that mean?
They're like Indy Melon to nose bone. Right. Sick. And I'm like,
all right.
I mean, that shit looked dope. I don't know what a rodeo flip is, but I fuck with it.
But both her and Sean White, the Flying Tomato, both looked like we talked yesterday about the Russian figure skater who's like 15 years old and who, when you watch her skate, you can just like it's. Your eyes can tell the difference that she's like a level above, even if you don't know shit about figure skating. And like, I had the same experience with Chloe Kim and, Sean White. Like they were both just, they looked like their bodies worked differently with gravity than the rest of the competitors.
They spun much more. You could really see like people torquing their bodies to get the spin, where you just see them kind of casual, just whoop. I'm spinning out of it.
Yeah.
And that is my expert commentary on snowboarding. Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to Chloe Kim. I can't imagine that it was an easy thing for her to be like, no, I don't want to play violin and piano, mom and dad. I want to do snowboarding.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I felt bad as a Asian kid. I felt like even the gold medal might not be good enough for her.
Right. Yeah. Didn't you say you told your mom about
My mom, she was like, what school did she go to? I'm like, what?
She's 17.
She's 17. Yeah. High school.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, it should be Harvard. I'm like, right. I don't look, mom. I didn't go there. And she's like, that's why we don't talk.
Is that going to get her into Harvard?
Yeah. She's like, I love the zeitgeist, though.
So just a developing story is over the weekend and towards the end of last week, one of Trump's main dudes, Rob Porter, was sort of fired / resigned in a really, like, the description of it in this New York Times piece about his last few days makes it sound like he just, like, could not get the hint. Like, he would go back to John Kelly and be like, hey, so I'm having second thoughts about resigning. And he was like, no, you're fired. Like, you have to leave. And he was like, all right. And he's like, so I'll just take a couple days to get my stuff together. Oh, and Kelly's like, no, you, like, need to be out of
now.
Here. Like, you're making me look really bad. And then, like, the next day, he's still, like, gathering his stuff from his desk. He's just like, but anyways, this guy's a human monster who apparently, like, physically abused two of his ex-wives, and really just, like, horrifying testimony from them.
And it's wild how the White House just cannot get their shit together to, like, you know, come out and aggressively, like, we have a zero tolerance policy
on this.
It's
literally
kind of
the easiest thing in the world to just be like, that was bad.
Yeah.
Right.
This guy's
that's
awful.
That's bad.
He should go.
And that's essentially what they finally got around to doing yesterday on the, you know, Sunday morning talk shows. They kind of all went out and blanketed the airwaves with being like, yeah, you know, once we found out, we got rid of him. It's unacceptable. And, you know, that's what the president thinks. But man, the president on Twitter did not give that impression at all. The only thing he tweeted about with regards to this, and, you know, it wasn't necessarily clear that it was with regards to this, but he did tweet about how, like, you know, what is there, no due process anymore? People's lives are being ruined over allegations.
I saw that tweet. I feel like every time I see a Donald Trump tweet, I have to, like, double check whether it's real.
Right, right.
I'm always like, is this a parody account? Please, he didn't say, oh my God, no, he did.
Right. It's like the Gorilla Channel thing with Pixelated Boat. It's like,
Where you thought that was real.
Yeah, where he thought.
It's hard to know.
Yeah.
But I guess that makes sense for somebody who has his own horrible history to deal with, that of course he can't come out and be like, yeah, that's a problem, because then the conversation would inevitably be like, okay, now what about you?
Right.
Yeah. So the only card he can play is, well, these allegations, man, they're lying.
Yeah. And it's also just a reflection of his overall sort of, he treats this entire job like it's, you know, he works off of loyalty only. Like, it's just like, well, is this person my friend? Then they're a good person. And, you know, I think that works in business, especially when you have, like, a multi-million dollar head start because you invested millions of dollars from your father. But it just, he's not up to the office. Like, it just, it doesn't seem like he has the faculties to deal with this job.
No.
I'm going to agree. Yeah.
So I think he's not a great president.
Great.
Call me crazy.
Your
but
thoughts.
I don't know if anyone's noticed.
But it's interesting because this is a thing that we tend to see happen where he'll do something that is, you know, from a PR perspective, just completely outrageous. And it overshadows something that was a story that we should also be outraged about, but it's sort of getting overshadowed by the domestic violence stuff, and that is the Democratic memo.
Well, also not to forget that one of his speechwriters also had to resign this weekend.
Oh, right.
Before that became a story.
So there was a second member of his, I guess, I don't know if speechwriters are considered cabinet members, but somebody who worked in
staff.
The Trump White House,
yeah.
Staffer, who had to resign because the Washington Post found out about allegations from his ex-wife that he drove over her foot with his car and put a cigarette out on her hand.
Whoa.
Yeah, and the whole thing was like they called him for a comment and then he said no and then resigned immediately.
Right.
So, yeah, they have a lot going on. But yeah, I guess that does overshadow the fact that the Democratic memo, which people were trying to release, that gets completely consumed by all of the, you know, deserved outrage over how the White House handled these resignations and stuff.
So just real quick, the Democratic memo. So Nunes released the Republican memo where it was, his conspiracy theory. We talked about it last week, but just a refresher, sort of like his conspiracy theory based on a handful of very carefully selected facts from the Russia investigation that made it seem like, the FBI was out to get Trump. And the Democrats were like, okay, so if you're going to release that, then here's the other side of just that story so that we have complete information out there.
Yeah, because before with the Nunes memo, the DOJ, DNI, their director of national intelligence was like, do not do this. This is very damaging. And he's like, fuck it. We doing it.
Right.
Now that the shoe's on the other foot, the DOJ and DNI are also, again, with this one being like, this also has a lot of sensitive information. And they're saying, oh, well, we don't want to fuck anything up, so we should really reconsider. This is a very sensitive document. Oh, it's just like the selective outrage isn't surprising. It's right. To be expected. So basically now there's like four options. Someone can YOLO it on the floor and just read the shit out loud and enter it into record, which technically isn't illegal, but would just be kind of weird. They could kill the thing completely and just not do it, but I don't think that'll happen. The House could vote to override the president.
Yeah,
okay, yeah. Paul Ryan will do that.
Yep.
And or they can redact it and release the memo like they did the Republican one. It seems like that last option could be the one.
Wait, redact it like the Republican memo?
Yeah, because
they didn't redact shit from the Republican memo, did they?
No, yeah, they did sort of relent and then redact certain things like that were
certain details.
Certain details. But with this one, they're saying like we can just do the same process,
right?
But we'll see again because it doesn't benefit the Republicans to have this out.
Now, I know smart people on the left and the right who think the Russia investigation is like overblown and they're like, you know, this is just a thing that Democrats are doing to distract themselves because they can't accept that Trump won. I know people from both sides who say that. And like, I'm having a harder and harder time believing that with the way he behaves. Like, it just seems, unless you're just going to say he's like, just accidentally behaving like an incredibly guilty person. I'm just confused why he would
be just as likely with this guy, which is the crazy fucking thing about all of this.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, who cares if it's overblown? You might as well check.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
Especially when a lot of people are like warning, like, hey, there's something going on from other countries.
It might be smart to figure out what it is.
Yeah. Right. And that only helps him if they go up and they're like, all right, actually, just turns out you're crazy and you don't like to look guilty about anything, so you just lie all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, whatever. Well, they're out to get him.
We will see. And we wanted to talk about just ways that the government is finding to fuck the little guy. And there's a handful of stories coming together neatly for our theme. We're always hoping that we'll get a nice cohesive theme and the government cooperated by just fucking over consumers.
Start up the outrage machine.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Trump administration. So, Miles, I came in this morning. I said, did you hear about the change to Snap?
And I was like, yo, people are heated. The layout of the new Snapchat is pretty whack and people are really fucked up over it. And I said, I don't really fuck with Snapchat, but I guess the kids are upset.
Right. Which is apparently a thing that is happening. Anna yesterday was, you know, super producer Anna Hosnier, being one of the kids herself, was like mad about it and said it wasn't lit, which is the worst thing somebody of that generation can say.
That is the proper nomenclature.
Yeah, so... SNAP being also the food stamp program.
Oh, you meant supplemental nutrition assistance program.
Right.
Okay.
So,
yeah, that's fucked up too.
Yeah. So the, Trump administration announced that they would like to change the food stamp allowances, which nobody has had a complaint with other than, you know, extreme right wing people who still believe that welfare queens are a thing, which they're not.
Right.
That was just a false story during the Reagan administration. So they think that people are getting by too easily on food stamps. And what they're proposing is to basically replace food stamps, or at least a big portion of food stamps, with a program where they ship canned food to people who would previously be able to go to the store and use food stamps to buy food for themselves.
As Mick Mulvaney says, a blue apron type program.
That's his... Okay. How? In what way is that blue apron?
That food is being shipped to their
house.
That
is it.
So
that
any... Okay. And food there's nothing, in a box is blue apron.
Nothing fresh.
Nothing fresh. It's just canned food.
It's a predetermined diet. Right. That the government will send to you with things like peanut butter and pasta, shelf-stable milk. Oh, yum. Canned meats and fruits and cereal.
Yeah.
With no fresh vegetables or meat, which that's usually what's in a regular Blue Apron.
And I'm sure they'd be super receptive to people who have like peanut allergies or whatever. I'm sure the government would be great at dealing with those.
What's even the proposed upside? Is that cheaper than the food stamp program?
So what they're saying is that that would allow them to buy food at like in mass quantities, and that would like give them a price break.
Yeah, like at half the cost or
something
like
that. But they're not counting all of the difficulties of like shipping. Like people pointed out that Blue Apron had a really rough financial year last year because it's just incredibly expensive to do what they do, like send food to people and, you know, give people any choice or like a good user experience and deliver that food on time. So this goes against all research in sort of charity and how we give charity to other countries, how we give charity inside our own country has been leading in the opposite direction of this. It's basically been saying, we would much prefer that you give people money or give the charity money so that we can redistribute that money to people, because the best form of charity and the most effective way to help people is by giving them money because they know what they need. Like, whereas canned food drives, like people might not need canned food or they might not need like beef stew. Yeah. Beef stew might not be good for them because they have an infant.
I don't need peaches in light syrup because I have glaucoma.
Right, exactly.
That's what I need fucking help with.
I think it's important to highlight, this is not the people who are members of the program saying, like, we need money instead of food. Oh, just send us cash. These are people whose interest is what would make the best outcome for all of society, including economically.
Right.
These are studies.
Right.
So it's like, how do you not foresee the downstream costs if you're shipping all of your poorest citizens boxes and boxes of peanut butter and cling peaches?
Right.
There's huge downstream costs there, you know, with food deserts and healthcare costs. That's insane.
Right.
Yeah, and even with the proposed idea, they expect the states to shoulder all the cost of distributing and putting the thing together. So it's like, it's just this fucking idea. It's not even a real thing. It's just like, let's just see what people think so we can, you know, further help people who are poor feel ashamed of their situation.
Right. And the disparity is so bizarrely heightened in our country that it's like, Wyatt Coke could probably just pay for this program out of his pockets, like the change in his pockets.
For some reason, this program made me think of Wyatt Coke, too, because
the
central ethos of this is rich white Republicans who think they know what's best for other people, and that the problem poor people have is that they have too much control over their own decision making, and that they just aren't like smart enough or capable enough to make smart decisions for themselves. And so that the real problem is that, you know, they need to make those decisions for them. Whereas it's just, you know, every study will tell you the real problem is that they have been, you know, institutionally discriminated against. Both, you know, poor white people, poor black people have been institutionally discriminated against. And America is not a particularly socially mobile society. Like, Americans think that it's all based on, you know, how hard you work and how much you're willing to pull yourself up.
It says it is on the box. The box of that America comes in has a big shiny sticker that says socially mobile
on the
society.
Label, there. Read it. There was a Paul Ryan quote from earlier in the year where he was saying, like, where you are born has nothing to do with where you end up in America.
Oh, and for sure.
So The Economist came back and was like, you know, compared America to other countries like Finland, Norway, Denmark, other Western countries,
all those
that are
countries
relatively egalitarian. And basically what your father makes allows people to tell within 20% what you'll end up making in those countries, whereas in America it's 50%. So it's like way more deterministic in the United States. than in other Western countries that have more like socialist policies, what we would consider to be socialist policies.
But now it's conflicted with capitalism because, you know, the huge opponents of this shitty Blue Apron for Poor's program is the Food Marketing Institute, which is the largest, like, the lobbying group for supermarkets.
Right.
And food retailers.
They're just trying to unload their cans like you are when you go to the canned food drive and give all the bullshit.
They're like,
bro,
you're
going to
send people boxes. They will not buy at the fucking stores. So what the fuck are you going to do?
So this is a place where Walmart is actually on the people's side.
Right. Well, they're like, oh, we like EBT because that means we get the money.
Right.
So it's really just a fight of who's going to get the money. Is it the canned food people or the food retailers?
It's big box, you guys. It's
big
this
box.
Cadre of box factories all over the country just trying to get everything boxed.
In a box. Dude, I bet box business is booming.
Yeah, there's – yeah. You see boxes on the rise lately.
All right. Let's talk about another policy that the Trump administration released yesterday. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has spent the past – you know, it was – created by Elizabeth Warren back when she was still a professor at Harvard.
Oh, you mean socialist cuck?
Right, socialist cuck, Elizabeth Warren. And it was basically after the financial crisis, you know, they saw all of this rampant corruption within the financial industry, and they decided to create an independent agency that was able to look at financial services and, you know, fine companies if they did shady shit. And so far, since they were instituted in 2010, they've given back $11.8 billion to 29 million consumers since 2011. So that's an average of $407 returned to roughly 9% of the U.S. population. So they're like helping people out. Like that's
Giving back. They're hurting the banks, Jack.
So that's
They're hurting Wells Fargo, Jack.
The extremely wealthy financial companies that are like making record profits in the past 10 years have claimed that this agency is making it impossible for them to do business. And so when Trump came into power, he put Mick Mulvaney in charge of the CFPB, and he fucking hates the CFPB, has come out and specifically said in the past that, like, he thinks it shouldn't exist. And so he announced.
That's all Trump does, though. It's like, right. I expected his Secretary of Interior to just be someone who's like, I only go outside. I never enter a building.
Right.
Like,
right.
Everything
right.
is just bizarro opposite world.
Right.
As if you're a kid with blocks and holes. And you're matching them to the opposite shape. It's
right.
just so insane.
Just jamming it in.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
like, yeah, the new head of CFPB, Daddy Warbucks.
Right. Yeah. So their policies, surprisingly, he recently requested a $0 budget for the January to March mm-hmm, Q1, mm-hmm. Saying the Bureau would draw on their reserves instead because they're apparently just crushing it. Financially, and then they are trying to change it so that they are overseen by Congress. The whole idea is that they are overseen by the Federal Reserve, and so they have independent funding. So, like, Republican, Democratic squabbling cannot get in the way of them doing their job, and they're basically trying to change that so that they are funded by Congress.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll effectively be the death of this agency that was in place for a very brief time and actually giving money back to consumers.
That could be a slippery slope because if they lose the House, you know, shit could change. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's weird how many organizations that get insanely profitable use those profits to craft a loud narrative that they're poor, like that they can't catch a
right.
break or make any money.
Right,
right.
And it's like, yeah, but you're crafting that narrative with a team of highly paid lobbyists. It's a self-defeating argument.
Yeah. It's a difficult argument because, you know, people in the financial industry will just tell you, no, but you have to understand, like, this bureau is, like, the worst. And, you know, I know a lot of these people and they argue it with conviction and, like, I can't argue with them because it's like they're saying, you don't speak Chinese. This person's saying a crazy thing in Chinese. So you just have to trust me. I'm like, I don't. I'm like, okay, fine.
I mean, yeah, dude, the banks are hurting, man. You know, I was trying to explain to my kids, man, they got to get an iPhone 6.
Right.
I mean, 6S, but, you know, oh,
right.
God, you start telling your kids that.
Right. It's true. The iPhone 6 sucks.
My kid has to drive a used Range Rover. Okay? Shit is embarrassing.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. We wanted to cover some of the coverage, some of the reaction to the shooting, because it's, I don't know, it's kind of become surreal almost, like, at this point, the way that the media responds in the same ways. I don't know, it seems kind of clear to me, like, what the problem is, but they managed to, you know, write 80 stories about a mass shooting.
Yeah. It's weird because we see it so much. Like, we're even predicting the coverage now. It's like, right. Okay, on Fox, they're going to say, oh, wow, we're talking about gun control suddenly. And then on, like, MSNBC or CNN, it's going to be about maybe gun control, or but also, like, really personal stories about the victims and people who survived and things like that. And, like, I don't know, even since we've started doing the show, how many shootings there have been. Some we haven't even reported because, to an extent, we've kind of normalized these things as a country,
right?
Which is really fucked up. And then now I just feel like the coverage and our attitudes, like, are they going to shift now? Like, can we then sort of make this more about how we are going to solve this problem than sort of, like, begin finger-pointing? Because that happened immediately.
Right.
It's just finger-pointing rather than how do we move forward? How do we make sure this doesn't happen again?
Yeah, one thing specifically about the coverage that I think is interesting is there are these experts who, like, on social contagion and violence, they're, like, forensic experts who study, like, the aftermaths of these sorts of shootings. And they're desperately begging. Every time there's a mass shooting, they're begging and, like, putting out these petitions that are signed by thousands of experts to not show the shooter's picture and not say their name. You can say everything, all the biographical details. You can give all the details, but just don't make their
right. Don't
face,
make them into anti-heroes.
Don't make them into anti-heroes. Exactly.
Yeah. The problem with the coverage is that the coverage is monetized, right. And so American culture doesn't have the self-control to not want to know those details. There's just something fucked up where it's like you kind of want to know what he looks like.
Yeah.
Right.
Even if you know that's wrong, and news organizations know that, and so it's like, who will be the bigger man here? And it's like nobody is being the bigger man.
There was a sheriff in Oregon who basically was like, look, I don't want to say the guy's name. I don't want to, you know, show his picture. It was a school shooting just similar to this one. And the Washington Post, of all people, were like, no, like, we need to tell people what they want to know. This is censorship. And these experts are pointing out, like, when there is a streaker at a professional athletic event,
Feed goes off. Don't give them any air.
They turn away because otherwise, you know, they don't want to encourage these people who are clearly, like, doing a stupid thing just to get their face in front of, like, millions of people. Mm-hmm. They just, you know that showing them would encourage it. And granted, like, I've watched games where I'm like, damn, I want to see the streaker. Like,
especially when it goes on for a while, like, oh, shit, he fucking just juked that security guard.
Yeah, exactly. Like, watching streakers run around and evade security guards is one of the most fun things you can see at a live sporting
event. It's liberating.
It's good television.
Right.
But they actually resist showing it because it's the responsible thing to do, and it, like, avoids creating chaos. And the mainstream media at large just can't. Like, this is a huge event. This is, like, a Super Bowl for mass media.
Yes.
So that's one thing that I think could help, but...
But the thing, too, is, like, I mean, there are now, you know, news organizations that make money through subscription a little more on the internet, but it's all click-based money. And so there's just a huge incentive to get the most clicks, and it's just watering down journalism. It's not who has the best journalism. It's, like, who gets the most attention.
Yeah, who can package this in a way that makes it the most clicks. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, when you look around, I mean, Fox, Laura Ingraham on her show, she, after starting the show talking about the shooting, took 6 minutes, a whole 6 minutes out of her show to talk about how safe the AR-15 is, the weapon that was used. It's crazy because Chris Murphy immediately on the floor is like, we need to do something. Like, when are we going to do something about, you know, gun control reform? Mm-hmm. And then she goes, I don't know. I mean, look, the AR-15, I don't know, let's just play this clip so you can hear. This is what's happening on Fox News in the aftermath of this shooting.
Let's look at the AR-15, what makes it so popular, and overwhelmingly what makes it so safe. It's all over the country because it's a really good self-defense weapon. I would have one in my home for home defense. Thousands of people have them in their home because it shoots very straight. You can carry more ammunition in it, and it's actually safer because you're going to have less, you're going to have a lower, I'm teaching a course in Hebrew right now, so I'm all over the place. You have a less likelihood of sporadic fire or hitting innocent people if you're using it for home defense because it shoots really straight. So it's actually a very safe weapon. Yep. It's easier to shoot than a pistol. It's got more points of contact for stability, but in the hands of the wrong person. And again, where was the parents? What was the home life of this child? There's so much more involved here than the weapon.
Aaron,
this guy Chris is so far out of left base.
Aaron, there are some things we've learned. His mother died last year. He was adopted. His parents, Linda and Roger Cruz. He's followed, apparently, according to Trace Gallagher, the Iraqi fighters online and the Syrian resistance. Now, maybe he was just following them, I guess,
because
he was curious.
Red flag.
We don't know more. Mm-hmm. But there's something going on there. So we'll learn more about
there's
that.
Something going on there.
So they managed in one thing to avoid talking about gun control by saying, well, it's the parents' fault. And it could also be ISIS's fault.
Right.
But not the gun, because it's the safest gun ever.
Yeah.
Because what, I guess...
It shoots straight.
If in the right hands, it's the safest thing.
Right.
But when it, I mean...
If all those kids had AR-15s at school, then...
Which is...
Only like three of them would have gotten shot at recess that day. It's just frustrating because, well, also, first of all, the right wing was very eager to associate him with ISIS and
tangentially
radical Islamic
trying to do that, right.
groups. Yeah. And it turns out he trained with white nationalist groups.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, he went to one training. I mean, to be completely fair, but the guy did confirm from the Florida Republic, which is a white civil rights group.
Is that how they frame it?
When are people going to fight for our civil rights, I say? but it's the guns. Like, unless you just don't believe in statistics, there's no way to argue that it's not the guns.
Yeah.
They plot, like, number of mass shootings on a graph with number of guns owned in the country, and it, like, exactly correlates. Whereas if you look at things like... mental health, which is what the media likes to point to, mental health spending, mental health problems, all mental health indicators are equal in like countries like, you know, Australia, the UK, Denmark, like all these other countries, France, you know, all these advanced countries are pretty similar to each other when it comes to all the mental health indicators. The only place that the US stands out is gun ownership and mass shootings. And the only other country that is close to us with regards to gun ownership is also like has a lot of mass shootings. So
what do you guys think about? Because there's such fatigue around. It's like this happens every time. And then the same statistics are stated every time.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, like we're even getting caught in the trap of the same trying to like walk this logical path towards.
Yeah.
Well, with all these things, knowing all this, then yes, we need to address guns.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't mean a fucking thing if the legislators that are elected don't put forward bills and vote on them to actually enact any kind of change.
Yes.
Right.
Because we're...
I think the only answer is to continue to say the same thing over and over again because that's...
Or just hold these people accountable, too, who are making the laws, though, too. Like... It's easy for them to, you know, hide under the fray that's going on because everyone's so outraged and talks about all the – whether it's gun control or whatever. It's like, but what about the people who actually have the power to do something?
Yeah, well, and the dark, morbid thing that will eventually happen and not – I'm not trying to – is that a legislator's kid will get shot in a mass shooting and then suddenly they'll give a shit about this,
right.
You know?
Well, because when you even look at like Florida, for example, if you really want to do something, then I think we have to think about who we are electing into office because the Republicans in – the Judiciary Committee in the Florida House of Representatives, they have like a stranglehold. Like the numbers are clearly laid out that pro-gun right Republicans dominate the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And they are passing bills left and right. Like they just passed one last week that basically said that a person who has like a concealed carry permit doesn't violate the law if the firearm is, quote, temporarily and openly displayed. So what they were trying to do is protect people who had concealed carry laws that, like, if someone saw it and called the police on them, they would be written up because, like, you're not doing this right.
Right.
So they built a law to protect people to sloppily carry a concealed weapon that is, like, just basically an NRA wish list piece of legislation. Yeah. And you look at how easy it is to even procure a firearm in that state. You have to be 21 to buy a handgun, but this kid wasn't. So the only thing they could sell him was a fucking AR-15.
Right. Yeah. That's what a gun store owner says. I believe the reason he used an AR-15 is because he is under 21 and you cannot purchase a firearm other than a long gun legally. So he went, and it's like a liquor store refusing to sell you beer but offering you crystal meth instead, because he went and he couldn't get a handgun, but he got an AR-15, which is,
insane.
You know, the gun that has been used in all these mass shootings. And this was somebody who openly said he wanted to be a professional mass shooter.
Right. Which makes it even crazier because it seemed preventable in so many ways.
Yeah.
Because even the kids who were being interviewed were saying when he got kicked out, people were joking about how, like, yo, he might come back, or watch, like, joking, like, oh, he might shoot up the place. And the students even sort of, they sensed that. And and again, this was something, this is a thing that is preventable on many levels. So if you want to take it the mental health route, then let's do that. Let's have a real conversation about mental illness in this country and bring it out in the open so it's not so stigmatized for people to even think, like, oh, I don't want to out myself as someone who has a mental health issue because of, I don't want to embarrass myself or shame myself. You know, one of the initial Trump budgets that he put out last year slashed, like, mental health care. And that is the thing we spend the most on in this country, even before, like, cardiac health, is mental health is by far the largest piece of spending that healthcare providers make.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know, man. Anything having to do with changing the conversation to mental health just seems like
not
it's
not fully.
Yeah.
But I'm saying if you want to do that as part of the thing, but also really shore that up. Like, because what happens is it's a mental health thing and they just say that to avoid doing anything. And, like, it's treated like, well, let's throw our hands up in the air. It's a mental. Well, look, then come at it from every angle, from a gun control aspect, from a mental health aspect. Mm-hmm. If there really is that much to be done, because, you can tell, like, even with on CNN, they interviewed a kid who went to the high school who got out of the shooting. And he said, oh, what do you want to say? And he was like, look, I'm just a kid. Like, we need the adults to, like, make laws that'll actually prevent this.
Yeah.
And if that's even being seen from the viewpoint of a kid, I don't know why we still are allowing people to sort of, like, weasel their way out of.
It's really embarrassing.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel embarrassed about this issue because it's so obvious. It's difficult. What needs to happen is, like, monumental change.
Right.
Like, disarming America. That's intense. There's, like, so many guns in America. It will be a.
That's impossible.
It will be a decades long process, but, like, you have to. That's the issue, too, is, like, the legislators who begin this process won't be alive by the time it's solved. So there's, like, not an incentive to, like, take action, I think.
Right.
Yeah. I'm reading this book, Better Angels of Our Nature, that I'm required to raise once every episode. Just
really, this is a very relevant book.
But it's about the fact that, you know, civilization has brought down the rate of violent crime and murder among the human race from, like, for every 100,000 people alive every year, back, like, in the caveman days and, you know, in biblical times, if you he just goes through the Bible and, like, outlines how fucking horrifying and violent life was that they depict. But he shows that, you know, violent crime and violent deaths have gone down to, like, a minuscule level. And it's just been people basically, you know, being brought under the rule of governments who they are willing to, you know, cede some control to. And most of these Western countries who are comparing America to have let their government take away their guns. The only difference between America and these other countries is just that Americans, they basically formed a government when they weren't quite ready to give up their guns. And so they still have these massive numbers of guns.
And also guns back then were, like, not AR-15s.
No. Right.
They took a long time to load.
Yeah.
Right. And, I mean, the inventor of the gun has come out, or his family, I guess, has come out and said he specifically would not have wanted this gun at all to be in civilian hands. And the idea that it would be would just be, like, shocking to him. Like, you know, this was initially invented to be America's answer to the AK-47 in battle, But then a gun manufacturer by the name of Colt got their hands on it, and they rebranded it as the Sporter.
Yeah.
As like a fun toy. And now you can get it in pink for your lady friend for Valentine's Day. So, you know, only to protect your home, you know,
in case Viet Cong come through.
You want to be, yeah, exactly. You want to be stylish while you're protecting your children. We wanted to name some of our favorites or our favorite and maybe least favorite rom-com tropes. So
favorite rom-com, go, Jack.
Probably Notting Hill Something About Mary, if you let me, if you allow it. Which it's not really a romantic comedy.
It's romantic. It is.
And it's a full-blown comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's about a guy getting a girl.
Yeah.
And it's called There's Something About Mary.
Yeah. So there.
It's absolutely a romantic comedy. Just because there's cheese in it, it doesn't mean there's...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, and I've been saying that the whole time, Jack.
So that's my favorite. Okay. Least favorite, Love Actually. Even though it's by the same guy who did Notting Hill. Not a big fan of Love Actually.
Aisling, what's your pick?
What is my pick? Oh, I love... I'm not sure if you guys ever got it here. There's an old Pride and Prejudice, not the Keira Knightley one. There's another one. It was the original one Colin Firth became famous for. Mm-hmm. And in it, there's a famous scene where he gets out of a lake and is like, oh, grumpily shakes some water off of himself. And I always liked that one because afterwards, you can't help but start speaking exactly like this the whole time. And it's very hard not to start speaking in English. And it's all about manners. And the sort of like looking at someone across the crowded dance hall, but the dancing is really unenergetic and sexy. It's just walking up, shaking your shoulders, walking back. And it's just that sort of like back in the day dancing. And it's all eyes and Mr. Darcy, do you think that for £3 a year, I'm going to marry someone like it's that sort of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really like that sort of old. They're doing a lot with just their eyes and a few manners, which I think it's very interesting. And you still get as much frisson. From it.
Miles?
Oh, I think One Fine Day.
What's One Fine Day again?
One Fine Day is with Michelle Pfeiffer and George Clooney, where they're, you know, just single parents trying to take their kids to daycare. But they're also balancing their careers at the same time. I don't know why.
How do they do it?
I don't know. It could be nostalgia. It was like one of the first dates I went on, like in sixth grade. Like I took my sixth grade girlfriend to see it, and I felt like an adult. I was like, this is One Fine Day. And it also made me think New York was the coolest place ever.
What is sixth grade age-wise? What's that?
12 years old.
12? You brought a girl to the cinema?
Yes.
Miles, you little legend.
Bought her a Diet Coke and everything.
Oh my God, that's fairly advanced. Yeah.
You know, I took an eighth grader once when I was sixth grade to see Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
Oh my God, yes. That's full on.
So, you know, I'm out here.
Yeah.
Yes, as they would say.
That's too advanced. That's almost child services.
Yeah. I'm a little suspicious of you.
Yeah. Well, you know, some say I was the original pickup artist. You know.
Yeah. Who was that some who would say?
Mostly me in a sort of drug-induced psychosis. But yes, that is me.
When Harry Met Sally, can I throw that into the mix?
Yes.
Yeah, also think that's
trope-wise, though, it always starts off with some level of deception. Like, I'm an undercover journalist, or like, I'm not a shitbag, or whatever. And then they're like, wait, I'm in too deep.
Isn't that
like
how
in love.
All relationships start with me?
I guess true, yeah.
I'm not a shitbag.
That is true. Right? At the beginning, you're like, nah, man, well, like, I'm really on top of my shit.
Just in general, I think the most misleading, it's necessary for the purposes of all romantic comedies, but the most misleading trope in romantic comedies is that dating is like really hard and like,
right.
Because dating is the easy part if you're like in a relationship with somebody who's like the one, whereas like, you know, a successful relationship years down the road is difficult. Mm. But like dating is, they have to like throw all these obstacles in the way of like people who are in love with each other, like, you know, a bet. Or, you know, one of them being an undercover journalist who is just doing research on them. Or my other least favorite trope is that rape is a funny prank, like in Revenge of the Nerds and Wedding Crashers.
I don't remember the bit in Wedding Crashers.
Well, you're talking about when he ties him up?
Yeah, he ties him up and, like,
has, like, he's, like, kissing on Vince Vaughn, like, the brother.
Right.
I don't remember that bit. Isn't that though, there's loads of, well, this is what happens with the Me Too campaign. You go, no, it never happened to me. Oh no, it has 18 times. I just forgot.
That's right.
That you just sort of tend to go, it's so expected, this stuff that you've, and so.
Yeah, at the time it was like, whoa, isn't it funny that a dude like tied up another dude and like forced himself on it? Whoa.
Right.
Gay people. Like, like was sort of like the vehicle that powered that joke.
And you sort of don't notice it because you're like, oh yeah, this is awful.
Isn't it? But the brother is involved at first, maybe? I don't know. God. I forget exactly how it happens. Revenge of the Nerds, which is like this beloved 80s movie that people have nostalgia for, the main character like misleads a woman into thinking that he's her boyfriend and performs oral sex on her. And,
oh my God.
And that's like a gas. Wow. That's like seeing.
And even the fact that it's called Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
Like revenge of any group of people on women is not great. Mm-hmm. When you start looking at all these little things, you're like, oh God, we got a lot of work to do, guys.
Mm. Well, we're still kind of there because we're living in revenge of the anti-feminist internet user.
Maybe. Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of the same shit.
That's what I mean. It's almost like that's gone, that's gone darker now. It's gone. Wow.
It has.
Yeah.
All right. Well, happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Guys. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Thanks, guys. What a weird date I'm on.
All right. We'll be right back. And we're back. We wanted to take a look at a Twitter trend, Miles, that you have been noticing.
Just the last 2 days. Look, white people don't want black people. They don't want us to have anything. Okay. So first, fucking yesterday with the Obama portraits, like there was a coordinated smear campaign from the likes of the right. You know, because Kehinde Wiley, who did the Obama portrait, also did versions of like classical art of like beheadings or whatever, and he does it in a style like, anyway, they basically were just, there was a lot of 4chan and you know, R the Donald subreddit type freaks out there trying to be like, oh, this is racist, this is bullshit, blah blah blah, and just it was like just a coordinated smear. And a lot of people suddenly became art critics yesterday. Mm-hmm. When the portraits came out, they're like, oh, this looks terrible, this is not art, oh, Michelle Obama looks like a pencil drawing or whatever. It's like, motherfucker, do you know art? Okay. Your avatar is you wearing a camouflage Under Armour hoodie. Okay. Also, so that was one thing. And I was like, okay, whatever. This is to be expected because this is sort of the state of America. But then also, someone pointed out how much there are people who really need to point out to black people that Wakanda, the imaginary kingdom from the Black Panther film that has many people excited, especially people of color, because look, oh, look, we got our own movie now that is seemingly unoffensive. So many people were tweeting stuff like, Wakanda is not real. Wakanda. Do they realize Wakanda is not a real place? Dear black people, repeat after me. Wakanda is not real. These are all different tweets. I'm not just saying this over and over.
No,
LOL.
They're...
Wakanda is fiction. Ancient Egypt wasn't black. Wakanda is not a real place. So look.
But Gotham City is.
Yeah. And Krypton is real. And Dungeons & Dragons is real.
Oh, it was. It got blown up. Catch up.
Right, exactly. Yeah. R.I.P. Rest in power to Krypton. But yeah, again, we don't. Star Wars, Tatooine is not real. Endor is not real.
Right.
Look, we know Alderaan is not real. Okay.
Hogwarts, though, real.
Very real.
Yes.
Okay, don't fuck around with Hogwarts. Whatever. I mean, again, it's just... I guess because of the idea of that this is a place where Africans still had the agency over their own kingdom without colonialism or whatever to do as they saw fit. It's like, oh my God.
So it's people getting excited about the Black Panther movie coming out and white people responding by pointing out that the movie is fictional.
Yeah, because you know some people in their even on their Twitter names are putting stuff about Wakanda
like
in
a
there.
Citizen of Wakanda.
Yeah, or whatever. Right. And then that's got people so fucking angry.
It's worse than a straw man argument. It's condescending to someone who doesn't exist. It's like inventing someone dumber than you.
Right.
So you could go, actually, and you're just in a room alone. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
I mean, you should just clap back and be like, oh, it's not? Can you show me any literature that proves Wakanda is not real?
Right.
And just send them on a very easy Google search, but... Mm. Yeah, that's new in white people don't want us to have anything news. Wakanda's not real. Update, Wakanda's not real. And also, everything to do with everything is racist. If it has to do with the Obamas. So. Mm.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.